From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So, America's favorite sport is eating. It's the only exercise we ever get. We eat in our cars, at our desks, at the movies. Our bellies are enormous, our arms are weak, but our jaws are so powerful, they can crack steel. There's only one problem.
Eventually, you have to stop because your tummy hurts.
Sad but true, Carl. Even the greatest American stomach has a finite capacity. Since your stomach is full, we're going to fill your ears with food. It is our favorite culinary stories of the last few years.
We'll start our Foodapalooza with some questions we asked our panel about food and drink.
PJ, a new study suggests that doing what can lead to immoral behavior?
Oh, I know all about this.
I know you do. That's why we directed this question to you, sir.
Yeah, drink.
Yes, they just figured that out. It's why the people in, like, the Whole Foods parking lot are so vicious about stealing your parking space.
Eating organic food?
Yes, eating organic food can make you immoral, according to a new study.
Peter, get out of here.
I'm sorry. You know, I dislike vegans as much as the next person. But they're nothing compared to drunks.
Wait, Peter. Who did this study?
A scientist did it, Paula, and this is what the scientist did.
Who made him a scientist? Did he just...
Did he find that badge?
He had a white lab coat. I wasn't going to ask for a diploma.
If he had a white coat, he might have been an ice cream man.
You never know. All right, well, we're going to explain. Right. So they took these groups of people. And they didn't even feed them organic food. They showed them pictures of packages of organic food. Some people were shown organic products. Some people were shown regular junk food or normal food. And then those same people were given quizzes and questioned about various things that were to ascertain their level of sort of moral turpitude.
Well, if you sat me down and showed me a bunch of pictures of organic food, I'd punch you too.
Well,
what a thing to do to somebody.
So what they determined was that there's something about organic food that makes people feel virtuous simply by virtue of experiencing it or having it. So therefore they feel they can get away with something bad because they've already done something virtuous. You see?
Well, that's where Democrats come from. I don't see what it has to do with organic food.
Did you know the other part of this study, Peter, which was that some of the people were shown foods that were labeled as organic. Some people were shown stuff that wasn't organic, but it was, you know, like relatively rice, kind of innocuous stuff. And then some people were shown like brownies and things that were called comfort food. And I think we're burying the lead here because the people who looked at the comfort food were nicer.
Yes.
They were less judgy. They were just in their own shame spiral.
Exactly.
From, like, looking at brownies that they weren't judging anyone else, which, you know.
I must make up for my disgrace by looking at this brownie by helping this person in need.
Yes, which I.
Well, people who had the organic kale were like, let the bastard die. What do I do?
Yes.
Amy, the Obama administration, as represented in this case by Michelle Obama, came up with yet another scheme to try to get Americans to do something they have consistently refused to do. What?
Well, does it involve eating healthier?
Yes. It is, in fact, eating healthier. Okay. Americans won't do it. First, we had the four food groups, and that failed because that implied the four groups were equally important. And besides, everybody ignored the fruits and vegetables group to concentrate on the much more popular deep-fried meat group. Then the USDA, the government, tried the food pyramid. That had the good stuff down in the bottom where the pyramid was wide and the bad stuff at the top, less of it. But Americans reacted to that by creating actual food pyramids many feet across, which they devoured. Remember when Applebee's restaurant came out with the all-you-can-eat great pyramid of cheese? So the new approach, they just came out this week. Michelle Obama introduced it. It's a picture of a plate with portions marked out. Lots of vegetables, lots of fruits, lots of grains, less protein, even less dairy. Americans looked at that. They looked at the picture. They were a little scared. But then they realized that real plates are three-dimensional. So you could fit a lot into that little space if you just went up.
Yeah. Right. Is there a height requirement?
There isn't. So McDonald's immediately came out with its 4-foot-high meat tower.
Just right.
fits right in the space. It's great. Right.
You know, my son has a concept of eating that sadly I totally relate to, which is, you know, I'll say to him, well, you didn't eat your salad, and he'll say, I'm full for that.
Oh, like there's a little pocket.
Yeah, his salad
in the
section
tummy.
Is full.
Yeah.
And yet his sugar and fat section is still able to load in. I'm full for that as he's grazing in the freezer. I think he thinks it's science when he says it, too.
Mo, foreign relations experts have spent decades trying to quell tensions between India and Pakistan to no avail. Well, finally, someone has a fresh, new idea to improve relations between the two countries. What?
I mean, I just think of curry. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I need a clue. Between India and Pakistan.
It's like Top Chef Waziristan.
Oh, they're going to have a cooking competition.
They are. They're going to have a TV cooking competition.
Okay, great. All right, good. Yeah.
Very good. You approve? Mo, you're...
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Think of it as a special episode of Iron Chef, say, where the chef's secret weapon is an actual nuclear weapon. The show's called Foodistan. That's both the name of the show and the kingdom Chris Christie hopes to rule over someday. Anyway, the show brings together 16 chefs from India and Pakistan to highlight the nation's shared passion for food, because the best place to put people from two nations with a history of violent conflict is a room with open flames and a wide selection of knives.
That actually sounds like Thanksgiving with my family.
Roxanne.
Yes, sir.
The New York Times reported that homemade organic meals are becoming more popular for what segment of our population?
Pets.
Yes, exactly. The Times profiled a woman who makes for her dog a dish made of chicken, red cabbage, cucumbers, carrots, berries, garlic, and parsley, all from her own organic farm. Weirdly, this article appeared in the paper's dining and wine section rather than its crazy rich people section. Of course, because dogs, as we know, care deeply, deeply about what they're eating. When they bark right before eating their own vomit, they're inquiring if it's organic and locally sourced.
What is the point of it? I mean, don't you eat organic food for better health and longer life? I mean,
well, why shouldn't your dog have better health?
Well,
and
I know,
longer
but you know, if you only live 12 years, wouldn't you eat Twinkies all the time?
Adam, fans of James Bond are up in arms at news that in the new Bond movie Skyfall, the super spy will for the first time be seen on the screen doing what?
Drinking a beer.
Yes, ooh, exactly. Ooh. According to according to Advertising Age magazine, thanks to a big product placement deal, James Bond will be trading his classic shaken not stirred martini for a Heineken in at least one scene in the next movie.
Oh.
It's true. It's like,
I don't usually drink beer, but when I do,
But they'll work it into the plot. You know, Q will help him out. 007, with this special hat, you can hold two beers without the use of your hands and still drink them.
Fascinating, Q.
We've developed this foam cylinder in which you can put a can.
Do you think there's a black tie version of a beer hat?
No, except his tuxedo is just printed on a T-shirt now. You know. We're looking forward to seeing him side up to the bar in his tuxedo T-shirt. Mm-hmm. He's going to order a brew. And then, you know, with that sophisticated James Bond air, he's going to smash the can against his head. And then somebody will ask him his name and he'll burp it.
It's also going to be Jimmy Bond now. Bond. Jimmy Bond. What are you looking at?
I love how we're also offended that the Bond movies might turn techie.
Yeah, what happened to the classy days like Octopussy? Jesse, the yes. White House has been accused of leaking sensitive information. Well, this week they went ahead and posted for anyone to see and copy what?
I would like a hint.
Well, they say, the White House says, it tastes great, but the Republicans insist it's less filling.
Oh, I do know this answer. This is the recipe for the White House beer, or what kind of beer they drink?
Yeah, no, what kind of beer they make. Yes,
they
the
make,
White House
yes,
beer recipe. That's the answer.
House
very good.
Brewery.
According to the White House, the president was inspired by the home brewers he met around the country, or maybe he had to drink one too many bottles of PBR in the campaign trail and was like, from now on, I bring my own. The White House ale recipe includes local ingredients like honey from the White House garden and the sweat of the wealthy job creators they keep imprisoned in the basement.
That gives it a nice tang.
It does, it does. So let's sum it up. The president, we now know this week, salvages furniture from dumpsters, and he brews his own beer. Great. He's not the first black president. He's the first hipster president. Next, he's going to be riding around town in an armored fixie bicycle. They say they have no plans to sell White House ale, but in case they do, we here at Wait Wait have prepared some advertising slogans for the Obama beer.
Obama beer, the audacity of hops.
Very good. You know, all right, hold on. That's a good introductory campaign for the next line of ads. How about these?
Yes, we can get wasted.
And
I'm going to need to see your beer certificate.
Consider all this an appetizer, because when we come back, we'll have Paula Deen and a bizarre new use for a standard kitchen appliance.
You'll never look at your spatula the same way again.
We are all about food today. It's like a wait version of Iron Chef, except the surprise ingredient is a bunch of old episodes.
Our task, chop them up and season them until they're bursting with juicy flavor.
We're going to start with a Bluff the Listener story we did in July of 2011 while doing our show at the San Francisco Memorial Opera House. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Lori from Seattle.
Hey, Lori. Gee.
I'm so excited.
You sounded, and that's great. What do you do in Seattle?
I own a graffiti removal business.
No wonder you're so happy.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Lori, I feel like your general positive attitude could make graffiti go away.
She just smile it off. Lori, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Lori's topic?
I know. Let's try it with the spatula.
Who says frying pans are just for frying things? Buy two and you've got an excellent set of symbols. Our panelists are going to read you three stories about everyday kitchen objects finding a new calling as something non-kitchen related. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. First up, let's hear from Faith Saley.
Serious chefs know that pizza stones make great crust. Now serious car buyers in Buffalo, New York know that pizza stones make hot buns. That's right, one dealership is offering a free heated seat option by giving away pizza stones to sit on. Frank Soriano, owner of Soriano Wheels, got the idea last winter when his mother Angela sent him to his sister's with a hot pizza stone. Soriano says, "I was freezing, so I decided to wrap it in a blanket and sit on it. My butt was in heaven." Soriano says his daughter particularly enjoys the pizza seat, as she calls it, after swim practice. Sometimes we hear her sizzle, but it doesn't hurt.
Pizza stones, giving away as seat warmers for cars. Your next story of someone getting creative in the kitchen comes from Paula Poundstone.
The Nutritious Massage in Ojai, California provides a massage that is also delicious. The client lies on a table while a fruit smoothie is skillfully prepared on top of them. "It sounds crazy, I know," says founder Janet Pilliam, "but when you think about it, what better tool than a potato masher to ease tight muscles? With the use of a mallet, rolling pin, wire whisk, ladle, and even some unexpected kitchen utensils, the massage therapist, working with the speed and precision of a sushi chef, crushes, squeezes, and chops a combination of fruits selected from a menu by the client directly on their bare skin. I'm hooked," claims regular client Mary Carter. "I can never decide if I should get the fruit I love to drink in the smoothie or the fruit that feels good. The blueberries sometimes almost kind of pop, and then the pressure is like a jolt. I don't really like to drink watermelon juice, but when she rolls it on my back, it's good deep tissue."
Smoothies as massage in Ojai. Your last story of a new use for a common cooking implement comes from Peter Gross.
People always look a little strange in their driver's license photos. Their eyes are closed, their smile is too broad. But Mr. Nico Alm of Austria looks a bit off in his photo because he's wearing a pasta strainer on his head. Mr. Alm isn't donning this comical headgear because he showed up at the DMV after a night of wild yet efficient Austrian debauchery. He's doing it for his faith. A recent Austrian law states headwear is only allowed in official documents for religious reasons, so Mr. Alm lightheartedly told officials he wanted to wear the pasta strainer for his photo because he is a devout and committed member of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, who refer to themselves as Pastafarians. Austrian officials, never once to pass up an opportunity to not get a joke, have allowed his driver's license photo to stand. Now Mr. Alm wants Pastafarianism to become an officially recognized faith in Austria, and judging by Austria's history of tolerating different religions, he should be just fine. All right. Lori, here are your choices. Somewhere somebody's using a kitchen utensil in an odd way. Is it from Faith Saley, pizza stones to warm the seats of cars? From Paula, potato mashers and all kinds of other things used to make smoothies in the back of massage clients in Southern California. And from Peter Gross, a colander uses religious headwear officially now in Austria for Pastafarians. Which of these is the real story of kitchen utensils in the news?
Are Austrians really that funny? I've been to Ojai, California.
Yeah?
I actually got a massage there, too, but it wasn't with fruit. It was mud.
Oh,
so
that's tasty.
So I think that has to be it.
You're going to choose Paula's story because you believe people down in Ojai are paying to have smoothies made on their backs.
Yes, and because I love Paula.
Oh, well, that's...
Well, that's very nice.
Certainly a legitimate reason in my book.
All right, well, then your choice, then, is Paula's story. All right, well, we spoke to somebody familiar with this true story.
Nico Alm insists his choice of somewhat unorthodox headgear is a requirement of his religion, Pastafarianism.
That was Esme Nicholson. She's a producer at NPR's Germany and Austria Bureau, talking about the Pastafarian who got his headwear, his colander, officially recognized. I'm so sorry, Lori, but in fact, as you now know, your affection for Paula has led you astray. As it has so many, Paula. All those broken-hearted people. Peter Gross had the true story. However, Paula does get a point for
seducing you
with her loveliness. So thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All my plans, I'm a pasta man. Fettuccine Alfredo or any other kind. There's nothing like lasagna to ease my troubled mind. I eat lots of that. That's why I'm so funky fat. I'm a pasta man.
There's nobody tastier than chef, restaurateur, and TV personality Paula Deen, and her food isn't bad either.
Paula joined us for a memorable visit back in April 2009.
Hello, Peter. Hey, y'all. I'm so glad to be here.
We're so glad to have you. And your story is true. You weren't one of those ambitious women who started from the earliest age to go out and get rich and get
famous.
No,
honey, I just wanted to be a wife and a mama. I didn't get started, Peter, until I was 42.
Really?
I retired first.
Right.
And then came out of retirement to try to earn me a living.
Right, and then you opened your restaurant and
yes,
another restaurant.
Yes, I started a business called The Bag Lady. You know, I had those two handsome, precious sons, and I kind of pimped them out on the street to sell these wonderful little lunches.
They really are cute.
Oh, I'm sure.
Thank you. And
no,
sweet.
They're gorgeous.
Well, and now, of course, you've got your cooking shows and the Food Network and your
yes.
cookbooks. Now, you are known. You're famous, infamous in some circles for your recipes, including, and I just got a short list here, the cheesy ham banana casserole.
Yes.
Paula's fried butter balls. Bacon wrapped, deep fried macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, guilty.
Sure. But the one that everybody talks about is, of course, the ladies' brunch burger. It's a hamburger between two Krispy Kreme
donuts.
With a fried egg on top.
Yes. And you would not believe how stinking good it is.
I know.
I believe it.
I believe
it.
I believe it.
That, listen, that kind of happened by accident. It just kind of unfolded.
Wait, oh, wait a minute. Hey, stop.
But
tell me how that happened.
A kitchen collision.
No. I want to hear the story. What happened?
It was so good that Michael had just gotten in and gotten to sleep good because he's a harbor pilot, so he works crazy hours.
This is your husband?
Yes. I ran back in the bedroom and I said, Michael, you've got to taste this. But there's only one catch, Peter.
Yes.
It's only one serving per lifetime.
Really?
Yes.
You only get one.
Wait, Paul, this is Roxanne.
Hey, Roxanne.
Now, here's my question, all right? So you got a burger, all right? And do you say, oops, I'm out of buns. I think I'll use donuts.
Well, you know, those donuts were there.
Yeah, in the way that they often are.
The hamburger was there. Mm-hmm. So I said, what the heck are we using buns for when we got these luscious donuts?
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, Paula, that, could I just want to interject here. Paula, this is Tom, and I really enjoy this kind of cooking, and I'm just wondering, when I have my heart attack, do you have anything in your recipe book for the recovery period?
You know, I actually do, Tom.
What is that?
Well, there's salads in there. And other good stuff in this newest cookbook.
Can you name any
cookbook.
One other thing?
No.
Is that your famous fried salad?
Yeah. You've gone from cook to your cookbook author, TV show host. You've got in addition to your books and your restaurants in Savannah, you've got a line of furniture coming out.
Yes, it is so drop dead fabulous. And
is it covered in butter?
Yeah. How do you deep fry an ottoman?
Oh, it's easy, honey. You just dip it in egg first. Y'all are making me sound like a pervert.
No. I gotta tell you, if we are playing a game, you've won it, Paul. So don't you worry about that. But no, I have a serious question. And the serious question is this, is that there are other people who've achieved what you have and have become kind of a purveyors of lifestyles. There's Martha Stewart, in which everything is just so and perfect and artful and graceful. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, like William Sonoma, in which you're supposed to be a wealthy person in Napa. How would you describe the Paula Deen lifestyle? I mean, is there a way you can sum it up, your worldview, what you're selling?
I think in one word, Peter, if I had to choose one word, I would say comfort.
Uh-huh. We got a lot of nods from the audience.
I love the comfort food. When you walk into my house, I hope it says to you, oh, come in. I want people to feel like they're coming home.
So you're at home, Paula, at your home in Savannah, and I want you to do me a favor. I want you, if you can, to tell us what is in your refrigerator right now.
Oh, my goodness, my refrigerator is slap-kadab full. There's pumpkin cake on the counter. There's a caramelized apple cake on the counter. There's a standing rib roast that I had left over from the other night. Let's see, I'm coming in here to look. Let me see what all's in here. Oh, my gosh, so much chicken and lasagna and lots of sour cream and butter and mayonnaise. There's tons of mayonnaise in here. And, there's a bowl of fruit.
How'd that get there?
I don't know. I must have got that from my grandson, Jack.
That's got to be the loneliest bowl of fruit in the Southland.
Let me tell y'all what the best thing in my refrigerator is. It's a chocolate brownie cobbler. It will knock your socks clean off and into the washer. It is fabulous. And listen.
What?
Michael, I just walked in here in the kitchen, and Michael's sitting down to eat. Guess what he's eating?
What is he eating?
Nutrisystem.
No. No.
Yes, he is. Wedge potatoes.
What a blow.
Beefsteak. He has made a vow to lose 95 pounds by Christmas, and then he said he's going to write a book, How I Lost 95 Pounds and Married to Paula Deen.
Well, Paula Deen, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
It's colorless, flavorless, vaguely slimy, and yum-a-rific.
That's right, Paula Deen. We are going to ask you three questions about
tofu.
Oh, yuck, I can't stand it.
We figured that would be the case. This, of course, is the Asian miracle food, the yin, if you will, to the fried Twinkies yang. Oh. And if you get two...
Tofu.
If you get two questions, two out of three right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in the home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Chef Paula Deen playing for?
Paula's playing for Sandy Williams of Trenton, Missouri.
All right.
Okay.
Like every other important thing in life, tofu has a legendary origin. According to ancient Chinese lore, how did tofu come to be? Was it A, trying to fool enemies into thinking his army was larger than it was, an emperor decreed that soybeans be molded into large white fake soldiers? Was it B, a wise man tried to come up with an immortality elixir and instead came up with tofu? Or C, 100 pounds of soybeans were hidden from thieves down a well and when brought up had been transformed?
Oh, my goodness. I will take B. Choose B.
That somebody was looking for an immortality elixir, the secret to eternal life, came up with tofu instead.
Yes.
You're right. That's what happened.
You're kidding.
According to Chinese legend... His name is Liu An. He was the son of an emperor. He went up to the mountains to produce the secret to everlasting life. Instead, came back with tofu, which everybody thought was pretty good anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
That's really good.
I can't believe I got it right.
You did. You did, Paul. A good heart will lead you every time. Here is your next question. Over the years, tofu has been credited with various almost magical powers, some good, some bad, including which of these? A, if you eat nothing but tofu... It'll make your irises, that's the colored part of your eye, it'll make them milky white. B, tofu can make your sweat smell like fresh blueberries. Or C, it can make you gay.
C, it can make you gay.
It can, Paula, you're right. It can make you gay. In 2006, a writer named Jim Rutz, who was very exercised over this, tried to start a crusade against soy products because he noted that it had trace amounts of estrogen, the female hormone. Ipso facto, eating too much tofu can make you gay.
Michael, I'm so smart. He said, mm-hmm.
He's
and
busy.
And pretty, too.
Yes.
When I say something stupid, he says, oh, you're so pretty.
Here, Paula, is your last question. Tofu is sometimes a source of controversy, as it was just recently, when what happened? A, prisoners at Angola State Prison in Louisiana sued successfully the warden, saying the replacement of their cheeseburgers with soy cheese tofu burgers was a violation of their rights. Was it B, a Colorado vegan was not allowed to have a custom license plate which read, I love tofu, because the DMV said it was obscene? Or C, students at a high school in Florida all refused to eat tofu because of a rumor that it was boneless, processed lizard meat.
Oh, my goodness. I would say A.
You're going to go for A, that the prisoners successfully sued,
yes,
saying that making them eat tofu was a violation,
yes,
of their rights.
Yes.
No, actually, it was a license plate.
You are kidding.
I'm not. I'll explain why. Kelly Kaufman Lee, this is the name of the woman, she loves tofu. She wanted to tell other drivers that with a license plate that read, and I'll spell it out for you, I-L-V... T-O-F-U.
Oh, no.
And the Colorado DMV said the message might be misinterpreted. That's what happened.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
It's just nuts, but it happened. Carl, how did Paula Deen do on our show?
Well, enough, Peter. Paula, you had two correct answers, so you win for Sandy Williams.
Yay, Sandy.
Paula Deen is the host of Paula's Home Cooking and other programs in the Food Network. She's the author of numerous books. Her latest is the Deen Family Cookbook. It's out now. Paula Deen, what a joy to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Peter, it's been my pleasure.
It's been
Best
fun.
Best wishes and love to y'all.
Thank you, Paula. Take care.
Bye-bye, y'all too.
Bye-bye.
If love makes you give up steak and potatoes, rice, corn, chitlins and tomatoes, love makes you give up all those things. I don't want love.
So, this hour has been all about food. We've had many courses, an amuse-bouche, an appetizer, a salad course, metaphorically speaking, of course, and now it is time for the entree.
Sam Cass was a chef in Chicago working at a private home when his client got a new job in Washington, D.C., so he decided to move along with him. Hey, a job's a job.
Mr. Cass is the assistant chef at the White House and the president's senior policy advisor for healthy food initiatives. He joined us when we went out to the Music Center at Strathmore in Bethesda, Maryland in June of 2012.
Does it ever get a little bit boring cooking healthy food? I mean, if they are, I mean...
Not if you get to cook out of that garden.
Yeah.
It's always...
Oh, yeah, because you actually... You, how much of the produce from the garden do you use?
Everything gets used. So every night I get to go down there. We grow year-round, so I'm going down there nearly every day.
I never thought the day would come, especially in the early 21st century, when the President of the United States' family dinner would depend on that day's harvest.
Yeah, you know, we're coming full circle.
Well, kind of survivalist like, moment, isn't
I just,
it?
Yeah. I just imagine the First Lady going to the kids, I'm sorry, there were locusts reading. Tonight you go hungry.
Yeah. Are there ever deer on the South Lawn? That would be kind of cool.
That's why we have Secret Service down there.
Yeah, I understand.
They take good care.
They got those guys in unconvincingly clean overalls talking into their sleeves going, we got a squirrel, we have a squirrel.
Yeah. It works out pretty well for us.
But a lot of those agents are distracted sometimes.
That's
when
that only happened once.
In the garden, only by the ladybugs.
So... I imagine that whole issue of healthy food in the White House could be an issue. I mean, because obviously Mrs. Obama is very, very big advocate for healthy eating, but she's got two young daughters. I have young daughters. Do they ever, like, knock on your door in the middle of the night going, Sam, give me a Pop-Tart. I won't tell her if you won't.
That's one of the many reasons I don't live in the White House.
I understand.
I don't mean to be rude, but do you ever sometimes wish that you could cook for Governor Chris Christie? I mean, that would like... Is that... It would just... Is that... I mean, you could do anything you'd want to do. Like, it's zebra! Yeah.
An entire one!
A rhino kebab!
I'm not sure I have the skill set for...
Really? No, probably not. I want you to confirm something I read once, which is that, despite what you may think, the president gets free boarding, we know that, but he has to pay, or his family has to pay for his own food. If it's not like a state occasion or an official occasion, like, he pays for his kids' Rice Krispies. That's like his job.
That's absolutely correct.
And does that ever affect your choices? It's like the president says, look, book royalties were down this year. we need you to make a mock apple pie out of Ritz crackers. That's all we can
We haven't quite gotten to that.
It hasn't gotten that point yet.
Okay, here's another question.
Yes.
You know how sometimes you're just in the mood for Chinese? Do they ever do takeout?
We don't do too much takeout.
He does pick up, though, because the president...
Burgers.
We all know the president will stop at some great place here, like burger joints or the chili dog place, right? It's always cheeseburgers, chili. That is both a wonderful publicity stunt, a great way to meet the people, and a cry for help, it seems.
Hey, look, the way we look at this is if, you know, you eat balanced diets, what, you know, the First Lady teaches the kids, and then you go out and have a burger, it's great.
Well, so
just turns out that, you know, most of the time when they're going out, then they're going to get burgers.
You're from Chicago, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I partly grew up in Chicago. I just wanted to confirm this. The hot Italian beef sandwich is a vegetable, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. The Al's,
just checking.
The Al's beef?
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah.
So is the Harold's chicken.
And yeah.
So,
yeah.
There's a ribs and bibs.
Yeah. Ribs and bibs.
We wanted to talk a little bit, of course, about the Healthy Foods Initiative that you've been working on with the First Lady. It's a tough challenge trying to get Americans to eat better.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of forces convincing them not to.
Well, you know, we're facing as a country some really serious challenges. First Lady's worked very hard to unite the country around the health and well-being of kids and of families. And it's going to take all of us, parents and teachers, business leaders, doctors, thinking, stepping back, what can I do in my role to help improve the health and well-being of our kids?
Right.
They should make chubby kids mow the White House lawn.
as punishment?
No, I mean, it's tough love, but to get in shape.
Right.
That's not cruel.
Well,
chores are normal.
Well, it's called let's move, yeah, right?
I want to be clear, we are not endorsing that policy.
All right.
Not at all.
Well, Sam Cass, we're delighted that you came to join us here today. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
You'll Put an Eye Out.
So you're all professionally about doing things that are good for you. We are not.
We're going to ask you three questions about things that are really quite bad for you. Answer two questions correctly. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Ready to play?
Let's do it.
All right, Carl, who is Sam Cass playing for?
Sam Cass is playing for Solomon Rakebach of Potomac, Maryland.
All right, here.
All right. Let's go, Solomon.
All right. Here's your first question. Early in the 20th century, a doctor named John Brinkley became nationally famous and quite rich because of his revolutionary medical treatment. What was it? A, solving people's fear of death by locking them in a coffin for 2 days. B, solving their impotence or lack of virility by transplanting goat gonads into them. Or oh. C, solving obesity by sewing his patients' mouths shut.
God, I hope none of those are true.
One of them is.
I mean, if it's B, did you hear what he said, what B was?
They're all nodding excitedly.
All right, I guess I'm going to go with the crowd.
Some people,
I guess I got to go with
some
B.
People out there are buying. So you're going to go with B, transplanting goat gonads?
God, I hope that's not true.
Well, are you going to pick it or not?
Yeah, I'm going to pick it.
It's true. That's what he did. Dr. Brinkley was known as the gland doctor. He charged upwards of $700 for his goat gonad treatment, which he did thousands of times before the authorities finally stopped him.
That's one of the worst things I've ever heard.
It's a pretty bad thing, but he did it for a long time.
Okay. But didn't the next person talk to the person before and say, how'd that work? I mean, wouldn't you ask?
So you'd think.
Yeah.
Who knows?
People were like, I won't check it out. It sounds good.
What were they supposed to do?
It was supposed to increase.
Oh, come now.
Oh, gosh. All right.
And let's leave it at that, shall we? Thank you, PJ. All right. No, two more questions. Two more questions. All right. Next question. One thing people always say is bad for you is cracking your knuckles. Well, one California scientist wanted to see if that was true. So how do you do it? A, he had his male test subjects crack their knuckles every day, and he measured how long it would be before their wives left them. B, he cracked knuckles on one of his hands, but not the other one, every day for 60 years. Oh. And then he evaluated if there was any difference in his hands. Or C, he painstakingly taught a dozen rhesus monkeys in his lab to crack their knuckles so he could test them.
I'm going with B.
You go with B? He cracked his own knuckles on one hand for 60 years?
Yeah.
That's right. That's what he did. Remarkable feat of scientific focus. And it turns out there's no difference in his hands, so crack away, people.
There you have it.
All right, last question. Let's see if you can go perfect. As we all know, diets can be bad for you. Which of these was a real diet that people once tried to follow? A, the Sleeping Beauty diet, where you're heavily sedated and you sleep off the pounds for several days. B, the K diet, where you're only allowed to eat foods beginning with the letter K. Or C, the Illusion diet. For $200 a week, five obese actors follow you everywhere and make you look thinner by comparison.
Let's go with A.
You're going to go with A, the Sleeping Beauty diet? You're right. That's what people would do. If you're asleep, you don't eat. So why not sedate yourself into a coma for a couple days? Apparently, that's one of the ways that Fat Elvis tried to become Skinny Elvis again.
Wow. Apparently.
Carl, how did Sam Cass do in our quiz?
Sam had three correct answers, so he wins for Solomon Rakebach.
Well done, Sam. Sam Cass is the assistant White House chef and the senior policy advisor for Healthy Food Initiative. Sam Cass, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you.
To have you. Sam Cass, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
We got one last treat for you. Let's call it dessert. It's one of our favorite interviews ever with the great indie musician Nico Case. Now, you may ask what she has to do with food. Well, just listen. All right, you have lived, as far as we know, in Virginia, Washington State, Vancouver, Chicago, and Arizona, right? And you're a relatively young woman, and now you're moving to Vermont.
I'm kind of like a hobo.
What is chasing you, Nico Case?
Well, I lived in Vermont when I was little, and I always wanted to go back because everyone's so kind. And they don't age. It's really weird.
They don't age?
Well,
traditionally.
I saw my friend's mom for the first time in 15 years a few months ago, and she was even wearing the exact same shirt that she'd been wearing the last time I saw her, which I was in, like, sixth grade.
My experience reading and watching a lot of science fiction growing up, instead of starting my own band like you did, is that communities where people don't age usually have a terrible dark secret. like some sort of
alien. It could be
alien...
a pet cemetery situation.
Yeah,
I don't
for
know,
example.
But I'm going to find out.
There you're going to go. And we understand that in Vermont, you have a barn filled with pianos.
I do.
Why do you have a barn filled with pianos?
Well, I went on Craigslist to find a piano for the farmhouse, and there were so many free pianos that I thought it would be really hilarious to see how many free pianos you can get, because nobody wants their pianos, right? And then, you know, I also learned that free pianos aren't free, because you have to move them and then you have to tune them. They're like having an entire team of draft horses or something. They're very high maintenance.
Wow.
In the end. And also getting a piano on Craigslist does not guarantee that it is tunable. I have 8, and there are 6 that were tunable.
Wow.
Wow.
So what do you do with 6 tuned pianos?
Well, what we did is we made a remote recording unit, and we had lots of people come out, some folks from the New Pornographers and myself, and Paul Rigby from my band, and Garth Hudson from the band.
Wow.
And we did some recording, and there's birds and frogs and all kinds of stuff that you can't get rid of on there, too, so that was pretty fun.
I think also a good question is, what do you do with 2 pianos that can't be tuned? Just not,
well,
the recordings aren't as good.
Literally put them out to pasture and let Jesus see what it looks like. I just thought it would look kind of good out in the field.
Yeah.
Resting. Piano in repose through the season.
Or you could
like
plant
Black
things
Beauty.
In it. That'd be great.
It'll be like Black Beauty at the end of Black Beauty.
It'll
and
be
I
great.
Have the remainder of my days on the soft grasses, you know.
Well, Nico Case, we are so pleased and honored to have you. Nico, we've invited you here to play a game. We're calling...
They taste like a magic combination of sugar, happiness, and chalk.
So obviously your parents were either fans of the drug-addicted singer Nico, the Velvet Underground, or, and we prefer this option, they just loved Necco wafers. Those are the yummy hard little discs made by the New England Confectionery Company. So we are going to ask you, in fact, about Necco.
Bring it.
Bring it. All right. We put these together, 3 questions together. We got help from Steve Almond. He's the author of a book called Candy Freak. Get 2 questions right, you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Ready to do this?
I'm ready.
All right. Carl, who is Nico Case playing for?
Peter, she is playing for Kate Bowman Johnson of Philadelphia.
Ready to play?
Yeah.
She's already ready.
Kate,
she's,
I'm going to do my best for you.
All right. I like this focus here. The history of the candy, Necco wafers, goes back a long way. In fact, the wafers could be found where? A, floating on the water by the thousands after the sinking of the Titanic. B, in the rucksacks of Union soldiers during the Civil War. They just loved them. Or C, at Ellis Island in the 1890s, where they were the first, quote, American food many immigrants ever tried.
I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C, Ellis Island. The immigrants arriving there, being handed these dusty little wafers, going, oh, my God, the food here is small and dry and crunchy and tasteless. That's your choice?
That's my choice, yes.
Yeah, I'm afraid it was B. It was the Union soldiers.
No.
The candy was first made in 1847. And
Come
Union
on, they
soldiers.
Always talk about hardtack. They never talk about Necco wafers. How come Ken Burns hasn't put that in the documentary?
Oh, yeah.
I know every single thing about every battle, but I don't know that they ate Necco wafers. I can picture their severed limbs on the battlefield, but they never said anything about Necco wafers.
No, didn't you hear it?
Lincoln mentions it in the Gettysburg Address.
Lincoln was too depressed to bring up the whole Necco wafer thing.
No, Necco wafers were first made in 1847, and Union soldiers carried them. They enjoyed them in extreme situations that could be thrown with great effect at the enemy.
You don't remember that from the Ken Burns documentary? Right.
Well, it was in black and white. I couldn't tell if the discs were colorful or not.
Oh, so. Well, no, it was like
Garrison. My dearest Annabelle, thank you for the letter and for those delicious round wafers.
And then all of a sudden,
greatly, should you
send me some Necco wafers?
Set aside some Necco wafers for me at my funeral.
Today,
miraculously, I had a Necco wafer in my breast pocket, and it turned aside the
Elijah Hunt Rose.
Here we go. Question number 2. One of the enduring questions, maybe since those first days of the Necco wafer, maybe this is what they talked about, waiting for battle in the Civil War. What exactly are the purple ones supposed to taste like? Is it A, beet, B, clove, or C, steak?
I'm going
going to go with B, clove.
And you're right. They are clove-flavored candy.
McClellan had the metal wafers under his saddle, and he wasn't in battle, which he never was.
He actually refused to commit his troops to the 7 days battle because he didn't have enough Necco wafers. Did you know that?
No, he didn't. They're not moving anywhere until the Necco wafers come. We must build a pontoon bridge to bring the Necco wafers.
General Lee's plans for the Battle of Antietam were found on a Necco wafers wrapper. All right.
Cursed their Yankee candy. They drop it everywhere. They have no subtlety.
They're as flinty and indestructible as the candies they carry.
All right, here's your last question. Get this right, you win it all. Necco wafers today. Okay. They're odd tasting. They have one use in which they outshine any other confection. What is it? A, practice communion wafers for kids. B, leveling wobbly tables. Or C, replacement ammunition for the popular Rayline brand toy disc shooting guns.
All of those answers would probably be correct. I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, the communion wafers?
Yeah. But
yes.
I mean, I never had one of those guns. I don't know.
Go with A. You're right. It's A. Congratulations. No, they're good for Necco wafers because of their shape, size, and lack of flavor are good for both practicing First Communion and for having your own ceremonies at home, if you're so inclined.
They build your relationship with the Lord like no other candy.
They really will. Carl, how did Necco Case do in our quiz?
Necco did very well, Peter. Two correct answers, so she wins for Kate Bowman-Johnson. Congratulations,
oh,
Necco.
Oh, boy.
You did it. Congratulations.
Did it.
I love it. Necco Case is one of my favorite musicians. Necco, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for talking to me. Thank you.
Bye, Necco.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Good luck, Kate.
That does it for our food show.
If you need to burp now, feel free.
Support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from Focus Features, presenting the new film Promised Land, starring Matt Damon and John Krasinski, and from the director of Good Will Hunting, now playing everywhere. The Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business at Yeshiva University at cysimsfoundation.org. And eSurance, an Allstate company born online and offering tools and resources for drivers to make decisions about their car insurance at eSurance.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions' Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. BJ Liedemann composed our theme. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Thanks to Carl Castle, to all our panelists and our guest judges and scorekeepers. And thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.